My name is David D. Levine. I'm an award-winning writer of science fiction and fantasy. I have 4 novels and over 60 short stories published, and I've won awards, including the Hugo and Nebula. I live in Portland, Oregon. I travel a lot, and you can find my website at daviddlevine.com. I always have to use that middle initial because daviddlevine.com was taken.
This is a continuing episode of a series with David D. Levine. Right. Well, hey, would you like to do a 10-minute reading?
Absolutely. So I'm going to begin by reading from the beginning of The Kuiper Belt Job. Chapter 1. The Orca Job, Part 1. The Cannibal Club. 10 years ago. We were 7 then, at the end. There was no I in the Cannibal Club, only us. We were basically 1 person in 7 bodies. Strange, Shweta, Max, Kane, Ty, Alicia, and Damien. And we knew each other like the palms of our own hands. We finished each other's sentences, or more often didn't even bother speaking. We just knew. After more than 2 years living in each other's pockets, job after escalating job, making us richer and cockier and more certain of what we could pull off with our unique combination of criminal skills, we were at the top of our game and knew it. And the sex was amazing. We didn't think that feeling would ever stop until we were ready to give it up. And the Orca job was supposed to make that possible. But it didn't work out that way, of course. Damien's fingers were light and gentle on the thrusters as we approached the station. Our pilot had brush-cut black hair, warm brown folded eyes, and the loudest rainbow batik silk shirt in the system. His beloved Alicia, our thief, was right at his shoulder, long red hair tucked under a black watch cap for the job. Both peered ahead at the shifting shadows on Orca's rotating hull, her breath warm on his cheek. He tilted his head to touch her chin with his temple, a gentle skin-to-skin contact standing in for the kiss neither of them had the time or attention for right now. But his eyes never wavered from the target. Ty, our hacker, was all business, their hands flicking across the controls of their gear, half stolen, half hand-built, mostly illegal, and all their own. Their hair, fashionably cut in an asymmetrical swing, was a shade of purple that perfectly complemented their Vietnamese complexion. "We haven't been spotted yet," they said, "but I can't promise more than another 5 minutes." Damien grunted in acknowledgement. Alicia, her concentration fixed on the station ahead, didn't even do that. But Kane, the newest, youngest, and twitchiest member of the club, glanced to his mentor Max for reassurance. Max gave a little nod to say everything would be okay, then slapped a magnetized card down on the bulkhead between them, not allowing the announcement to interrupt their game of two-handed scat. Max was our muscle, with a wrestler's build. His smooth, round face bore long mustachios. Kane was his assistant, long, lean, and sinewy, with a broad nose and tight black curls. Hiroshi, the accountant who had set this in motion, was not so easily reassured. "Hurry, hurry," he whispered under his breath. Though not a member of the club, he was a good enough guest not to interrupt the professionals at work, but not so good that he could keep completely quiet. His daughter, Miyuki, flinched. Clearly, in his tension, he was gripping her shoulders unreasonably hard, but her expression didn't change, and she didn't make a sound. Hiroshi was a salaryman in a gray suit, indistinguishable from any other member of the species. If he didn't have information useful to us, he'd be beneath notice. Miyuki was a good kid, we thought, smart and well-behaved, but there was something a little off about her. Some of us thought she shouldn't even be here, but Hiroshi had insisted. And, to be fair, at 19 she was only 2 years younger than Kane. Her skin was porcelain smooth, with slick black hair to match. Shweta, floating beside Hiroshi, laid a reassuring hand on his shoulder, giving him her best warm motherly look to tell him the situation was well under control, and he visibly relaxed. Inside, she was as terrified as he was. Of all of us, she had the worst stage fright before a job and was the most unflappable during one, and with good reason, as she understood the situation better than he did. But effortlessly convincing people of things that weren't true was her special talent. Some of us sometimes wondered if she ever used it on us. Soft and round and smooth, with black hair and eyes, she looked like everyone's favorite auntie. And behind everyone else, hanging near the aft bulkhead with arms folded across his narrow chest, floated Strange, the man with the plan. His gaze took in everything from the station 100 meters ahead, to the redots on Damien's and Ty's instruments, to the cards in Kane's hand. Every bit of information immediately found its place in his memory palace, a fortress built of facts, probabilities, and conjectures floating in the blackness of his mind like the biggest, most complex station ever conceived, and every other piece immediately adjusted itself to accommodate the new input. He had a sallow complexion, a long jaw and nose, and intense blue folded eyes. Hiroshi's nervousness was no surprise to Strange, nor was Shredda's ease in tamping it down. Even the limited time remaining on the scrambler, which had Ty so concerned, had already been factored into Strange's plan, and in fact, the hatch that they sought was just now rotating into view. If nothing untoward happened in the next 3 minutes, they would dock there and sync Contessa's systems to the station with time to spare. But Kane's cards, and even more importantly Max's, which Strange couldn't see but could deduce from his play, were of concern. Kane was playing badly, his nervousness affecting his judgment, and rather than calling him on it, Max was letting him win. Kane, Strange knew, needed discipline, not indulgence. But now was not the time to call Max on that. Strange filed the information away in his memory palace for later use. "There's the hatch," he said, his voice laconic and unruffled. Damien, who hadn't noticed the hatch until Strange pointed us out, Strange noted that slip in his memory palace as well, triggered thrusters to nudge the ship toward it. "Docking in three," he said, and as the thrusters fired, everyone twitched in the air like fish in a sudden current. Alicia gave him a quick kiss on the cheek before moving away. She would be the first group through the hatch once they docked. Damien smiled, but kept his hands on the controls and his eyes ahead. I think I'll stop there.
Cool. Yeah, I really like how that showed the interplay among the characters and how they're working together on this job. That's really nice. And I think your point of view.
I write my novels all the way through from beginning to end. I don't skip around very much. And so you have to start somewhere. So I write an opening. And then generally I'll go back and revisit the opening a couple of times during the writing of the first draft as I learn things about the characters. And then after the whole thing is finished, I go back and redo the opening based on my understanding of the book as a whole and trying to have the ending and the beginning echo each other. And then very typically I'll get feedback during the process of submission and editing that causes me to revise the opening again. So most of my books get about three completely different openings. This one is actually quite different from the first draft.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Do you have a favorite among this group of people?
Strange is kind of the main character because he's the boss of the group. But at the same time, he holds himself back so much that he's not really, in some ways, he isn't part of the group. He's kind of the leader of the group, but kind of leads from outside, which means that he isn't really, you don't really know him. You don't really get to know him as a person until quite late in the novel. So Strange is the one that I spent the most time thinking about. Ty is the character that I identify with the most. Being the technologist, which matches my personal journey. I spent 20 years in high tech, and I've always been interested in technology. So Ty, the hacker, is in a lot of ways the one who is closest to being me. Alicia's the one I like the best. She's a kind and caring person, and I admire her fiercely. And Kane, the hitter, although he is the character most unlike me, is the one that I chose to open the book. And I've also written a short story based on his perspective. And in some ways, he's the most interesting character precisely because he is naive, he thinks with his fists, he doesn't think things through, and that makes him an interesting character to write.
Hmm. Nice. Yeah, yeah, very nice.
And all of this is why, if I do write a second book, which I think is still an open question, I'll be focusing a lot on Shweta, because she hasn't gotten as much attention as the others yet.
Oh, okay. So right now, this is a single book. There's no series right now.
Yeah. I wrote it as a standalone with series potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm waiting to find out how the first book sells before I decide whether or not to put in the effort to write a second book. Because I do have more stories of the Cannibal Club, and the people that have read it have liked it a lot, but it doesn't seem to be catching as much attention as I would like. And I think at the moment, it would be difficult for me to motivate myself to spend the year or two it would take to write another novel.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly understandable. That's the kind of the business side of writing, is writing it and then see what the market response is and then responding to that. Cool.
Sci-Fi Thoughts wants to expand. We want to grow from not just your podcast player, but to spread to your coworkers, your family, and your friends.
But I haven't got any friends.
Why, you little... One, two, three. Oh, no, you don't. We know you've got friends who are into the science, who are into science fiction. These are the people who are playing Halo and Stellaris and other space games instead of watching college football. There are the ones in the NASA t-shirts who are busy inventing something with their 3D printers. Email them a link to this podcast. Send them a social media request. Heck, even speak to them and tell them that you've enjoyed the show. The main point is to impress upon them how much you enjoy Sci-Fi Thoughts. Tell them to go to the URL scifithoughts.space. Don't keep Sci-Fi Thoughts secret, because keeping secrets from science fiction fans just isn't nice.
Check out the goodies in the show notes, because we've got links to David D. Levine's Wikipedia history and some other things that we picked up as we ran the series. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for your easy access. If you downloaded the MP3 from a website, go back to the page where you got the MP3, and there you will see the show notes. Next episode, more David D. Levine.
I just caught the LARP bug, live action role playing bug, about 2 years ago now. Kind of like a literal emotional roller coaster, in that you get on a ride that you know is going to put you in fear of your life, but you know you're not actually going to die.